Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Punantu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavatitamasu Madhidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Svaprakasho pisakshiva, divritya vyapyatenyavat, divritya vyapyatenyavat, pala vyapyatvamevasya, shastra kribhir nivaritam, shastra kribhir nivaritam, prakashaha api sakshi eva di vritya vyapyate anyavat pala vyapyatvam eva asya shastra kridbihi nivaritam. The question now is, how does knowledge actually take place, self-knowledge? How does it actually take place in the antakarna, in the mind? What is the process? What's going on internally for one to have an akhandaka or vritti, to have a jnana vritti? Now, vritti means thought modification, right? So jnana vritti is really a vritti of recognition, aham brahmasmi. How does that actually take place? So this is what is being dealt with now. So he says, let's just review just for a second the previous verse so that we can lead that in. The previous verse, it said, previous verses were going through the what we call Bhagatyaga Lakshana. And this is the idea. The Sakshi, the conscious being that I am, which is labeled by the word aham, even whether you have jnanam or ajnanam, still the essential being, which is Brahman, is the Sakshi. And that Sakshi is labeled as I am, I exist, I'm a conscious being. You're then, at that point, you're talking about Brahman. The problem is that this self, which is self-evident, we call the Sakshi, the witness, the innermost being, in terms of the one who knows the mind, who knows the thoughts, who knows all of the experiences I have. We call that the Sakshi from the standpoint of the mind or the perception. So the conscious being that as though illumines the perception, we call as the Sakshi. Okay? It is that Sakshi that is Brahman. That innermost being, that conscious being that I am, is Brahman. So now when the upadis, all of the upadis, beginning with the antakarna, are negated, right? The sakshi is differentiated from these upadis, then what happens? The sakshi alone remains, right? As me. In fact, nothing happens to the sakshi. When you're negating the upadis, the sakshi, yourself, is not being negated or changed in any way. That's why when you do this strict drishta viveka, the seer-seeing differentiation, you're differentiating all of these things from the sakshi. But in that process of differentiation, nothing is happening to you, to the sakshi, except that you recognize that yourself is not dependent on these upadis that are actually just being objectified. So there's a differentiation that takes place. It is this sakshi that by the vakya aham brahmasmi, it's by this vakya is pointing to this sakshi, right? So that sakshi, that when I say, if I say aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, those words now are referring to the sakshi that has been differentiated from all of the upadis. Otherwise, I say, I am the body. where I am, my mind. Now I recognize, because of the differentiation, now I can say I am Brahman, because I see that there is no limitation to my being. My being is changeless, and it's not subject to nama-rupa, to name and form, to any type of modification. So I recognize the changeless substrate nature of the conscious being that I am. And that being is Brahman. So now I can say, Aham Brahma. So now he wants to talk about, in this verse, how it actually happens. So he says, Swa prakashaha api sakshi eva. First of all, he says, the sakshi, the witness, means the conscious me. Swa prakashaha, even though that self is swa prakasha, it's self-effulgent. Right? It's self-effulgent. That's all that means. What it means is, even though the sakshi is already known, you are already known as I am a conscious being. Because the sakshi itself is swa prakashaha. It's self-effulgent. So he says, even though it's self-effulgent, divritya, by a buddhivritti, vyapyate, it is pervaded, anyava, like a pot. I'm going to have to explain this, but let me just tell you what the verse says. It says, even though the self is self-luminous, means it's self-evident, self-luminous, still, this is what he said, in order to gain knowledge of that self-luminous self, I'm adding some words here just so you can get the flavor. In order to gain knowledge, it needs to be pervaded by a vritti. In the same way that if I'm to gain knowledge of that painting or knowledge of anything, the mind needs to pervade that. In other words, I have to have a vritti of that object. Right? In order, like, for instance, in order to see this cup. I have to have a vritti. My mind has to have a vritti of the cup. In Sanskrit language, they'll say the mind pervades the cup. The vritti pervades the cup. That's how they talk about it. Vyapya means to pervade. And so any object in the world that becomes known to you means that vritti, right, you're having a vritti of that object, whatever it is. And that vritti that vritti removes the ignorance of the object, right? So here in this verse, when he's saying, first line, even though the sakshi, the conscious being, is self-evident, it becomes pervaded. We're talking about self-knowledge here. It is pervaded, right? Vyapyate, it is pervaded by the buddhi vritti, by the thought modification in the buddhi. Anyavat, just like anything else. Anything else means like a pot, you know, or like a painting, or like any object that we know. In order for it to be known, it must be pervaded by the vritti. Otherwise, it can't be known. Okay? But, palavyapyatvam eva asya. But, what we call palavyapti for this. This is a technical term. So let me just use palavyapti and then I'll explain it. But for this atma, palavyapti, that doesn't take place. That has nothing to do with knowledge. The Shastrakrit bihi. This is something by all of the knowers, all of the Shastrakrits, all of those who know the Shastra, who have written all the Shastras, Nivaditam, they negate this palavyapti. Okay. Now, we'll go back to this verse. Let me explain these two terms, vritti-vyapti and palavyapti. These are key terms. They're key terms, vritti, vritti-vyapti, palavyapti. Vyapti means to pervade. So, when knowledge takes place, say we're just talking now just about samsara, subject-object relationship, we're gaining knowledge of, well, just use sense perception for now, we're gaining knowledge of an object in the world. There's two things that need to happen in order for that knowledge to take place. The first is, say, let's use this cup as an example. The first thing is that my mind, using my eyes, my mind has to form a vritti, a thought modification of the cup. Right? Otherwise, the cup's not in my sphere. The cup could be here, but I'm not seeing it. So I need the thought modification, and I can use my eyes to gain that thought modification of the cup. Now, so that's one thing that happens. So now the mind, which is the sattva, right? It's maya, right? The mind is made of sattva, the five sattvic aspect of the five elements. So that's what makes the antikarana. So this antikarana now assumes a vritti which is true to the object. We say it's vritti, that's what we call vritti vyapti, it pervades the object. But now there's another thing that needs to take place, because this cup is not swaprakasha. This cup is not self-evident, right? This cup needs to be illumined. So it's not that, it's not all enough just to have the vritti vyapti, to have the mind assume the form of the cup. The consciousness which the mind enjoys, that we call chittabhasa, the reflection of consciousness that the mind enjoys, needs to be there to illumine the vritti, right? So now say, we take this for granted, but they're just splitting hairs now, right? Because it's going to be important in understanding the difference between knowing an object in the world, or having a thought modification in the world, and having knowledge of Brahman. There's a difference. Because all of our knowledge within Maya is knowledge of something which is anatma, not the atma, not the self. In a sense, it's Maya. It's going to be a nama rupa of some sort. So what has to happen is I need first the vritti vyapti. It means the mind has to assume the form of that object. And that object needs to be illumined by consciousness. Right? That's what we call the chidabhasa. Now it's a fact that every vritti that you have is illumined. It's sattva. Right? Just by the fact that you have a mind, every thought that you have, that thought is illumined. It is known. But the fact that it is able to be known is because it reflects consciousness. That's how we talk about chidabhasa. So Vidyaranya uses the term chidabhasa a lot. And chidabhasa is just acknowledging that in a given vritti, for any knowledge to take place, there's these two things happening. There's the pervasion of the object, so that you have a vritti true to the object, and the object is illumined. And these things are happening simultaneously, right? It's not like the vritti comes and then consciousness comes in from somewhere and illumines it. They happen at the same time, right? The vritti is formed, but you have to notice the two, I want you to notice the two aspects. The vritti is formed. The vritti is basically inert. It's mithya, it's maya. So the vritti is formed, and then the vritti which is formed is known, right? Simultaneously. The formation of the vritti is the pervasion of the pervading the object. That is technically called vritti vyapti. The mind pervades the object. Pala vyapti is the illumination of the vritti by consciousness. That's what we call chidabhasa. So now the object, the form that has been taken in the mind of the object, is known by what? By consciousness. The reflection of consciousness. You see that? It's a twofold thing. They're happening simultaneously, but both are happening. Because, why? Because the object itself, or the vritti itself, is not self-luminous. Right? It doesn't have consciousness. This doesn't have consciousness. Right? It's not shining of its own accord. So it requires consciousness to illumine it. And that's true for the whole Maya Upadhi. Anything mitya, anything within the Maya Upadhi, requires consciousness to illumine it. Consciousness is the luminary, nothing else, in fact. So everything you say, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. All this knownness that is taking place is the chidabhasa, means the consciousness that is reflected in the vritti that allows that object to be known. That is called palavyapti. So what he's saying here is that when self-knowledge takes place, the vritti vyapti takes place like anything else, like for a pot or a wall or anything. Doesn't make any difference. That pervasion is going to take place. What doesn't take place is the palavyapti. So what he says here is palavyapyatvam eva asya. For the self, for Brahman, for the self, this palavyapyatvam, this secondary being illumined, being illumined now by consciousness, which we call palavyapti, Shastrakrit bihi nivaritam. All of the Shastrakrits, the writers of the Shastra, those who know the Shastra, those who work with the Shastra, nivaritam, they all negate this. Palavyapti. So there's a difference here. So let's go on. And this is going to explain more Palavyapti and Vrittivyapti. And then I can talk more about it. We do a couple more verses. Buddhi tetsta chirabhasau. Dvavapi vyapnuto katam. Dvavapi vyapnuto katam. Tetragnanam tiyanashet. Abhasena katas purate. Buddhi tetsta chirabhasau dwau api vyapnutaha gatam tetra agnanam dhya nashet abhasena gataha spurate. Now he's going to talk, in this verse, he's going to talk about how we gain knowledge of an object. And he's using for an example a pot, a gata. Gata is a pot. He says, gata is a pot. He says, there are two things, when knowledge is taking place, two things pervade the pot. One is the buddhi, the antakarana. Right, which is the sattva, the five elements of sattva, so the buddhi, the mind. The mind pervades the pot. And what else pervades the pot? The chirabhasa, the consciousness that is enjoyed in the mind. So you have the vritti, right? The thought modification pervades the object. And as the thought modification pervades the object, the consciousness which is reflected in the thought modification, the consciousness which the thought modification enjoys, that also pervades the object, both. Okay, so that's what he says. The buddhi and tetsta chirabhasaha, the reflection of consciousness, which is abiding in the buddhi. Tetsta means, tet means that, abiding in that. Sta means the abiding. So the buddhi and tetsta chirabhasaha. So the buddhi, the intellect, and the chirabhasa, which is abiding in that, dwau api, he says, even though both, dwau means both, vyapnutaha, so not, you can say even though, both also, both of these dwau, these two, vyapnutaha gatam, both of these pervade the pot. Vyapnutaha means pervade, right? So what are the two that pervade? In any vritti, there are two aspects. There's the stuff of the vritti, which is just the antakarana, the sattva, the five subtle elements that make up the sattva, that's the vritti. And there's the consciousness which the vritti enjoys, right? Because every vritti is known. So the vritti pervades the object. So what happens? The vritti pervades it, and the consciousness that the vritti enjoys pervades it. So now it says, tetra, there, in that instance, when the buddhi, along with the chirabhasa, the reflection of consciousness, is pervading, when that happens, tetra, agnanam dhya, by the vritti, taking the form of the object, the agnanam, the ignorance, is removed. Right? The vritti takes the form of the object, the ignorance is removed. Nashet, dhya nashet, is destroyed. The agnanam is destroyed. Then he says, abhasena gataha spurat. By the reflection, the consciousness, the gataha spurat is illumined, shines. Right? So the vritti brings the object, pervades the object, and the consciousness illumines it. So without the vritti bringing the knowledge, without the vritti in the mind taking the form of that object, there could be no knowledge. That removes the ignorance. But for that, but now the object has to be known. Remember, it's not sequential. These are two things that happen. The vritti takes the form of the object, and then the consciousness is illumining it. Right? Because the chidabhasa and the vritti are happening simultaneously. They go together. So he says, now both of these things pervade, in any object in the world, both of these things are going to pervade the object, and this is how knowledge takes place. The vritti pervades the object, and the consciousness, the chidabhasa, illumines it. That's how knowledge takes place. You need these two functions. So the pervading of the object is called vritti-vyapti. The illumination of the object by the chidabhasa is called palavyapti. And these two things are necessary for knowledge to take place in the world. But it's not quite that way with Brahman. So let's do the next verse.
Brahmanya-jnana-nashaya. Brahmanya-jnana-nashaya. Vritti-vyapti-rapekshita. Vritti-vyapti-rapekshita. Svayam spurana rupatvat. Svayam spurana rupatvat. Na bhasa upayujyate. Na bhasa upayujyate. Brahmani agnana nashaya vritti vyaptihi apekshita. Apekshita. Svayam spurana rupatvat. Na abhasaha upayujyate.
So he says, but now, Brahmani, in reference to Brahman, regarding Brahman, knowledge of Brahman, he says, Ajnana Nashaya, for the destruction of Ajnana, for getting rid of the ignorance of Brahman, right? Vritti Vyaptihi Apekshita. The Vritti Vyapti is necessary. Okay? The pervasion of the Vritti, the vritti pervading Brahman, that is necessary for vritti, for Atma Jnanam to take place, for Brahma Jnanam to take place. So so we've got vritti vyapti and pala vyapti. Vritti vyapti has to take place. The vritti has to pervade the self. Okay? To know that I am Brahman. But svayam spurana rupa tvat. But because Brahman, the self, is self-evident, self-effulgent, spurana, means it's shining, it's consciousness. Because Brahman is consciousness itself, na abhasa, how does he say this? Na abhasa upayujyate. The abhasa, the reflection of consciousness, is not necessary. The chit abhasa isn't involved. It's not necessary. Because the consciousness, which the chit abhasa which makes the chit abhasa is the nature of Brahman, and so there's no use for the chit abhasa now. Okay. Starting to get it? Let's see if I want to do one more verse before I really get into it. I think I will do this other verse, and then we'll have enough. I can really talk about this and make sure you understand it. Okay. So what this verse is saying, the difference between atma-jnanam, knowing yourself, and knowing a pot standing for any object in samsara, is that to know an object in the world, the mind performs two functions. The mind, which itself is composed, we can break the mind itself up into the vritti, the thought modification, and the reflection of consciousness. That's how we're going to divide the mind into these two aspects. It's called the vritti and the chidabhasa. The chidabhasa is called reflection of consciousness. That vritti, it is what allows for knowledge to take place. How? Well, the vritti pervades the object, so it takes the form of the object. Is everybody clear on that? The vritti takes the form of the object? And then the object is known. Right? Because whatever form the vritti takes, then that object is illumined by consciousness, and that's what allows it to be known. But now, listen to this. Brahman, now you're gaining self-knowledge, this teaching methodology is taking place, right? The mind now recognizes the self, the sakshi, without the upadis. It recognizes that. What happens then? It has vritti-vyapti. The focus of the mind is only on the Atma. And so the Atma now is filling the vritti. So we say there's vritti vyapti taking place of the Atma. Without any vyapti, any pervasion of any of the upadis or anything. It's just vritti vyapti of consciousness itself. But when the vritti vyapti the pervasion of the consciousness itself takes place, now you don't need the chit-abhasa to come in and illumine that. Because what is being pervaded by the mind is the very consciousness which illumines the mind. And so chit-abhasa will still be there because the vritti is still there in subtle form, but it has no purpose. Right? Because the very consciousness that illumines the mind is now being overwhelmed, is now being the subject matter of the vritti itself. Okay? Let's do this, because I see some perplexed looks. But still, it'll be all right.
This is my hands are going to be shooting up in the air.
Okay, let's just work on this, maybe this verse and perhaps the next one, and then we'll do it. Chakshurdipavapekshyate. Chakshurdipavapekshyate. Gatadirdarshaneyata. Nadipadarshanekintu. Nadipadarshanekintu. Chakshurekam apekshyate. Chakshurekam apekshyate. Chakshur. Chakshur dipal. Yeah. Apekshete. Yeah, that's right. Chakshur dipal apekshete. Gata dehe darshane yata. Na dipa darshane kintu. Chakshuhu. Ekam apekshyate. Now he says, yata, just as, gata dehe darshane, just as in lighting in the seeing, darshana means seeing, in the seeing of a pot or something, gata dehe, a pot or something else, a pot, chair, plate, whatever, just as. What is involved in the seeing of a pot, etc., he says. In that, both your eyes and the lamp are necessary. In other words, say I don't see this. We're working, this is an illustration now, okay? Say I want to see this pot here, this glass. I need my eyes to see it, but if it's dark, I can't see it. Right? I need both light, the light, and my eyes to see this, right? So here he says, but, that's true, so just as I need both the light and the eyes are necessary to see a pot, he says, but not in seeing of a lamp. Right? I need a lamp and eyes to see the pot. But that's not true, not deepa darshane kintu, but not in seeing in the lamp, seeing the lamp. In order to see the lamp, I only need the eyes. Right? Because you see the lamp, the light of the lamp, they mean. In order to see the light of a lamp, I only need the eyes, because the light is self-luminous. But to see this, I can't see this without the light. I need my eyes to focus on it, but without the light, I can't see it. But now say I want to see, what I'm wanting to see, is the light of a lamp. Right, the light itself, then I just need my eyes, because the light is already lit up. So I don't need to bring in another source of light to light up the light. You get it? You get it? Kind of? Let me explain it one more time, because this is really important. Because it's just, you have to remember, this is an illustration that now we're going to go into it, how it works for self-knowledge. In this room, I require a light. The light to be on. If we turn the lights out in the room, I can't see these objects. So to be able to see this, I still need my eyes, but I also need a source of light in order to see this, because if I turn the lights out, I won't be able to see it. But if, and so say I want to see, my desire now is to see this cup, then I need my eyes and I need the light. But what if my desire is to see the light? Not the cup. The desire is to see the light. Then I only need my eyes and the light. Right? because the light is there. So I don't need the light to illumine anything, right? And the light itself is illumined. And so now all I need is my eyes to see that. So that's one step removed, right? So now look at this situation in terms of myself as a jiva. I have this body, mind, sense organs. This mind that I have, remember when we do the drik drisha, the see or seen differentiation, one thing we recognize in looking at the nature of the mind is that the mind, any vritti, any thought modification that occurs in the mind, it is known, right? Because the mind reflects consciousness, unlike a chair. That we use chittabhasa. This is what we mean by chittabhasa. Any thought, by its very nature, being sattva, it enjoys consciousness. We say reflects consciousness because, in fact, it doesn't have consciousness of its own accord. It doesn't own the consciousness. That's why they use the word reflection. Because wherever the chittabhasa, wherever the mind is, the chittabhasa is, the consciousness is. But consciousness, the chittabhasa, the mind doesn't own the consciousness. Because it's mitya. So a thought comes and a thought goes, consciousness remains. So that's why we use this term chittabhasa, just to show that consciousness pervades the vritti, but the vritti doesn't own the consciousness. The consciousness is really the non-dual substrate of everything, right? But it's not changing, not belonging to anything. So now, every vritti that we have, that vritti itself is going to be known because the chittabhasa, the conscious element, is there. Now, in terms of knowledge, when we say knowledge, now we mean that the vritti is taking on the form of an object. Say, we'll just use perception, but this is how, just generally, how knowledge takes place. Your mind takes on the form of an object, either through your sense perception or through inference or these various means of knowledge that we have. The mind takes on that form. That's what we call vritti vyapti. Like now, if I'm looking at that painting, my mind takes the form of the painting. We say it pervades the vritti pervades. The object is pervaded. The object is pervaded by the vritti. And so now, for instance, my sense organs are open. My eyes are looking at this room. Say, now I have a vritti vyapti of this room. Right? Because my sense organs are open. I'm looking with using the mind. I'm looking at the room. We say now this object room with all of the different elements in it is pervaded by the vritti. It's called vritti vyapti. And this vritti is now is known. Why? Because it is lit up by consciousness. That's why it's known. It's not known of its own accord. This creation doesn't. It's not. The vritti itself is not sentient because it's mitya, it's maya. The only thing sentient is consciousness. Right? And so this vritti requires, you have the vritti vyapti, but it requires the chittabhasa. It requires consciousness in order for it to be known. Is that clear for everybody? So there's these twofold things. Now, this teaching, Brahman, how do I know, have direct, immediate knowledge that I am Brahman? Right? So now let's look at this situation, because we know how knowledge takes place, according to this analysis, how knowledge takes place in terms of the world. How do you gain aparoksha jnanam, direct, immediate knowledge of aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman? What happens in the antakarna? What happens in the mind to allow this knowledge to take place? Now, let's just think about this. Yourself is already here. The self-experience, the conscious being, the chittabhasa, right? Conscious being that's reflected in every vritti, the conscious being, me, the sakshi, I am already completely 100% present. But at this time for an ajnani, this conscious being is totally identified, totally, with the upadis. To the point that the myself and the upadi, myself and the mind, myself and the body, the sense organs, we are one unit. There is no differentiation at all. Okay, so that's what we come with. Now knowledge has to take place that allows my mind, the antakarna is the one, the mind is the one that's ignorant.
So now this mind has to gain direct, immediate knowledge of my own swarupa, my own nature, as being absolutely free, as being Brahman, as being absolutely free of these upadis, as being Satchit Ananda, Satyam Jnanam Anantam. I am existence, I am pure being, which is consciousness, which is changeless, which is limitless. I need to recognize myself as that. Right now, as an Ajnani, I'm recognizing myself as a conscious being who is the body, mind, sense organs. That anyonya adhyasa, that mutual superimposition, is there. So what happens? Through all of these variety of teaching methodologies, from Drik, Drisha, Viveka, the neti, using the, you know, Avastha Traya, Sakshi, I'm the Sakshi, the one who's the same in waking dream, deep sleep, all of these satya mitya, all of these different prakriyas, these different teaching methodologies that we have, what do? It's as the teaching takes place, your mind now, through the use of words, the words are pointing to your own internal experience, say, negating all of the upadis one by one. And as your mind is seeing, these things are objectified. And as they're being objectified, yourself is being released from that identification. And so this is the neti, release, not this. Anyonya adhyasa, the mutual identification, is being disturbed. Right? It's being disturbed because the upadis are being objectified, and you are being left, right? As an upadi is objectified, you are still there, but now without the upadi. So now the upadis, the conditioning adjuncts, are being objectified one by one by one, and then there's a positive assertion of the one who is left, the conscious being that is left. When that positive assertion takes place, now what happens is that the mind is being directed, right, toward the self. When the mind is being directed toward the self, which has been denuded from all of the vrittis, from all of the upadis, now the mind, by the Mahavakya, is being directed toward just me, the Sakshi. So now the vritti is going to have a vritti vyapti, the antikaran of the mind will have a vritti vyapti of just me. Because the mind has been pointed in that direction and it's been denuded, differentiated from all of the upadis and now just pointed toward consciousness itself. So what happens at that time is that the mind has a vritti vyapti of just my being. That's what we call nirvikalpa samadhi, right? Because there, or even savikalpa, if the mind is still there, but the content of the mind at that moment is only atma. It's only consciousness. Now, is a palavyapti necessary? Now that the mind, you see, the mind has totally pervaded consciousness itself, the subject. The subject is the consciousness. It's the lamp, right? It is the consciousness. And so the palavyapti becomes totally irrelevant because the content of the vritti vyapti is only consciousness. And so in that vritti vyapti, there is just the self-recognition of myself, and there is no longer a subject-object relationship in that moment. Because the vritti vyapti is of the subject. And so now there can't be a subject aware of a subject. There is only the subject. Whereas if the vritti vyapti is of an object, like a pot, there's consciousness illuminating the pot. There's me in the pot. But what about when the vritti is only of the subject? Then the chit-abhasa will still be there. Because the vritti is still there. As long as the vritti is there, the vritti being sattva, the vritti itself is always illumined, but it's absolutely irrelevant. because it's like an illumined vritti being, and the vritti vyapti is already of consciousness itself. The fact that the vritti is illumined is not relevant. So the vritti vyapti is what really gives knowledge in terms of knowing Brahman, knowing yourself as Brahman. Is everybody getting a feel for this now? It's important because you have to understand how is it, what is going on that for knowledge to take place, for you to reckon what we call really aparoksha jnanam, or akanda akara vritti is another term that we use. When we say akanda akara vritti, means the vritti, the thought modification, it's akara, its form is akanda, it's non-dual. Like there's no division, there's no subject-object relationship in an akanda akara vritti. And this is what we call a jnana vritti, a knowledge vritti. So what happens in an akanda akara vritti? Well, as the teaching is being unfolded, the mind of the student is taken to the recognition of just the simplicity of myself as the sakshi. It's a knowledge of myself as the sakshi. So what is that knowledge? Right? What knowledge of myself as the sakshi, what makes it direct and immediate? I recognize myself as pure consciousness. How do I recognize myself as pure consciousness? Directly. Directly, immediately. It's because of vritti vyapti. Right? If the vritti vyapti takes place, I don't need pala vyapti, because what causes the pala vyapti is the consciousness, which is now the subject of the vritti vyapti. Mm-hmm. Get it? And so that's what causes this akanda akara vritti. Knowledge takes place through an akanda akara vritti. A vritti whose akara, whose form is akanda. There's no subject-object relationship there. Why is there no subject-object relationship? Because the vritti is of the subject. Where's the object then? Right? If the vritti pervades the subject, if the vritti pervades consciousness, right, then consciousness is the subject. Where's the object? You see what happens? So, now, these akandakara vrittis, this vritti vyapti polavya, this takes, when you're listening or in any moment of self-recognition, that's what's taking place. But we have to be careful because of the yogic conditioning, all conditioning that's come over from in variant strands. When we think of a word like akandakara vritti or nirvikalpa samadhi, we think of some huge experience where, like Ramana, sitting in the cave, you know, in nirvikalpa samadhi for hours. And so we need to have a big nirvikalpa samadhi experience. We need to have this big akandakara vritti that lasts for a long time, and now I'm a light, enlightened being because I've sat in samadhi for hours. This is not, I mean, you can do that, that's fine, but this isn't what that is. This akandakara vritti, the vritti vyapti, this takes place continually, even throughout the day, continually, every time you're just with yourself, even just for a split second, every moment that you're just recognizing your being, there's a vritti vyapti there. That's all it is. Because there's no need for the chittabhasa. There's no need for pala vyapti because your mind is just appreciating your own nature. Now, what else is important here? Once that knowledge takes place, right? The akanda akara vritti, or I appreciate the freedom of my own self. I appreciate my own nature. Then that nature is appreciated. The ajnanam has been removed. This self is self-evident. It's the consciousness that illumines the mind, that is always constant, no matter what the mind is doing, what the perceptions are doing. I don't have to go around all of a sudden having all these akandakara vrittis. I've already had my Pentakarabriti. Right? So I know myself. Because I have been released from the... that's why we say knowledge is what we call ajnana-nivritti. Self-knowledge is ajnana-nivritti. It's the elimination of ignorance. Once that eliminate that ignorance is gone, you are here. The same you, you know, the same you that as an ajnani, you are here. That same you now just has been freed from the ajnanam that caused you to take yourself to be one with the mitya, with the limitations of mitya, of that of things that are coming and going within the manifest creation. The Atma is no longer, your Atma, yourself, is no longer identified with that. Right? And that's not, you don't have to say, well, let me have another Akhandakaravritti so I can see that again. I don't have to have another Akhandakaravritti because the Akhandakaravritti has removed the ignorance that had caused that misidentification. Because myself doesn't require a vritti. For me to be me, I don't require a vritti saying, okay, now be me. Now look at me. I don't require a vritti to look at me. I require a vritti to remove the ajnanam. Now that doesn't mean that once I know myself, I can't have vritti vyapti. Just what if I'm meditating? What if I just feel like being with myself? You know? What if I just want to be with myself? I can have as many akhandakara vrittis as I want. You know, I can sit and just meditate and be with myself and resolve my mind and my being, just vritti vyapti. I can do that as much as I want to. But I don't need to do that. I can have this universe here. I can have my mind engaged. I can be thinking and seeing and talking and walking. And that in no way covers myself. Yourself was never covered before. What was covered was the covering of a jnanam. But it's not like you ever had a bag over your head. And when you gain knowledge, you don't have a bag over your head either. It's just there's no... The difference is only that there's nothing to cause me to mistake my being for this. The mistake isn't there. The same being that was mistaken to be this is now the being that is recognized to be free of this. And so that vritti vyapti that takes place at the time of teaching where I recognize my own swarupa as free from all of the upadis, all of the mitya, that's what has to take place. And when that takes place, then the knowledge is eliminated.
What's the one there?
The ignorance is eliminated. Everybody see? All right, and we'll stop there. Is that enough?
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate.
Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.
I have a question. If all that is here is Vijnana and Anandamayi, so then the Mithya is that as well, right? So then is the recognition of that truth somehow different than the Akhanda Akaravritti?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Exactly.
Could you rephrase it?
Yeah. Usually when we're talking about Akhanda Akaravritti, it's really the recognition of Brahman, Satyam Jnanam Anantam. This is Brahman, this is Ishvara, Brahman plus Maya. Mm-hmm. Right? But when we're talking of Akhanda Akaravritti, it's that non-dual vritti of just Brahman, without the Maya Upadhi. But then, we have to then recognize this Ishvara as being nothing but, right, Satyam Jnanam Anantam. There's still the recognition of the Upadhi. So usually when we're talking about Akhanda Akaravritti, it's just Brahman. Right? Satyam Jnanam, just pure Brahman. That's usually how it's used. Mm-hmm. But, and on the other hand, when we're analyzing this creation also, the Satyam, through Satyam Mithya, you also have to be able to get it. So kind of, we just don't call it a Akhanda Akaravritti, but it's still a Dvaita. You have to get it that this is Brahman. Right?
Is that something called the Samadhi?
No, it isn't. All Savikalpa Samadhi, in a sense, see, this is again, we're talking about really absorption into just non-dual Brahman. So when we say Savikalpa and Nirvikalpa, all Savikalpa means is that with the Akhanda Akaravritti, the mind is still present, right? And yet the Vritti Vyapti is there. But it's as though you're still aware of your mind, whose content is only consciousness. But the borders of the mind are still there. So it's almost like you could say, oh, look, you know, I'm totally just aware of consciousness. So the mind is still there, like if you look at your face in the mirror and you see your face, but you also see the mirror. But what if you're looking at your face in the mirror and you've just kind of only seen the face, the mirror, Upadhi, as though disappears. So that's the difference between Savikalpa and Nirvikalpa. You know. So usually when they're talking about Akhanda Akaravritti, we're usually talking about that in terms of just the recognition of the self. But that's not at all to say that the Satyam Mithya of this creation, this absolutely has to be recognized. I'm just saying when we use this term, that's normally how it's done. Yeah. But it can be, we don't use the term. But nevertheless, when we doing the creation, is set, the Satyam Mithya of the creation, you have to be able to look at this creation and recognize that there's nothing here but Brahman, in spite of the perception of all of these names and forms, right? But now this is the thing. You have the perception of all of these names and forms, and at the same time, you have the self-evident. You have your self-evident self, which is the very content of all of these names and forms, and you're able to appreciate that. You're appreciating two things at the same time: your self-evident content, and the perception of the names and forms, which are not away from your self-evident content. Do you see what I mean?
The self-evident content, there's nothing away from it. It's not being perceived by you. It doesn't need to be perceived by you because it's consciousness itself. It's Satchit itself. But there's nothing in your experience that is away from that. And nothing in your experience, if you start analyzing the Maya is something that is mitya. It means you can't find anything here. Everything here is, comes and goes. It's a, the kind of the Krishnamurti, the Buddhists, everybody. Everybody does this, you know, showing that there is nothing substantial here. You can't find an object.
But after taking it all apart, the being is still there.
The being, and that's what allows you to recognize.
Right.
Your being is absolutely stable. Nothing is there, ever touches that. And so even as you're dissecting all of these things in the creation, all of this dissection showing, oh, all of these things come into being and go out of being, all of these things are infinitely divisible, but they're all infinitely divisible in the one non-dual, non-divisible conscious being, which is the self of it all.
And I don't mistake that.
I don't mistake that because I've recognized it. Once you recognize yourself, so why do you look perplexed? What's
because the being, I kind of misunderstood. I meant like the being, like as you're analyzing it, as you're analyzing the objects, and they're changing. But what isn't changing is existence, and even in terms of the objects in a way, because.
Yes, that's true. Even in terms of all of the objects, there's nothing here but existence. So, yeah. So say, Swamiji will say like this. Say you have a pot, right? So the pot is. Now you break the pot into shards. The pot shards are. Now the pot dust is. The pot molecules are. Nothing disturbs the isness.
But then nothing disturbs the isness, and yet then, you know, the consciousness, that's the part I sort of can't explain or something.
Well, here's the trick for that one. Your understanding of even existence is not, you're not seeing it through your eyes. The experience of existence is the experience of consciousness. There's not two different things there. And so if you say, you could say like this, that's where you could say, the pot is known. You can just say the pot is known, the shards are known, the molecules are known, everything is known. So is the set, known is the chit. But there's not is over here and chit over here. It's set chit. So now, every experience that you have, there is nothing, no experience that doesn't enjoy that such it.
Well, why do we think that existence is different than consciousness?
Because this doesn't have consciousness, and this doesn't have consciousness, and this body-mind has consciousness. So the sukshma sharira, seen in the maya upadhi, because there are subtle bodies, because there's sattva, rajas, and tamas, because there are subtle bodies reflect consciousness, and then things that don't have subtle bodies don't. So now we look at here. I am conscious. Now there's space between us and there's conscious. So we've got these conscious bubbles. We've got the conscious, semi-conscious plants and the unconscious rug, you know. We use the example for that to understand that if you hold up a mirror and a rock to the sun, right? A mirror and a rock. These are both inert. The mirror is inert, the rock is inert. But the mirror material allows for the sun to be reflected in it. The rock material doesn't. Neither one of them is the sun, right? Neither one of them is the sun. Neither one of them enjoys the sun. They're both inert. Okay? But this upadhi is different, of a different quality. So the sukshma sharira reflects consciousness. For the things that don't have a sukshma sharira, they don't reflect consciousness on their own. So now think about if you have a dream. So now you can appreciate Ishvara. Say you have a lucid dream or imagination. In that imagination, there the objects that reflect consciousness, all the ones that have sukshma shariras in the imagination, and all the things that don't. So, from the standpoint of you as Ishvara, all of the things are known. Whether they reflect consciousness from their own standpoint or not, all of them are manifest knowledge. Right? Whether it be a rock or a tree or the sun or the sky, or living beings and creatures and trees and humans. Right? Some of them reflect consciousness, some of them don't. But from your standpoint as Ishvara, the one for whom this is manifest knowledge, the whole thing is known. Right?
But so everything really is consciousness. But it's just that those sort of beings or whatever that have this subtle body that reflects it, that's different. But everything is really consciousness.
Yeah, everything is equally consciousness. Yeah. Because there is no other thing. But that's why we say the rock and the mirror. Mm-hmm. Because there's a sukshma sharira, that jiva can say, I am the conscious being. Right. Even though it's no more the conscious, more or less the conscious being, right, than the trees or the grass or the rock.
Right. Yeah. Can I ask something really basic?
Yeah.
Because something I don't get with this whole thing I've been talking about, which is... It seems to be saying you don't need a chittabhasa to have a vritti of Brahman, right?
No, actually, it's not saying that. Well, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, because no, I'm wondering, Wilson, where is the vritti taking place if there's no...
Oh, okay, let me explain this a little bit. I didn't understand that question. A vritti, mm-hmm, by its very nature, it's a thought modification of the antikarana. Mm-hmm. By its very nature, it will have a chittabhasa because it's sattva. So in every vritti, even a vritti of the self, there will be chittabhasa there.
Okay.
Because sattva reflects consciousness by its nature. Right.
Okay.
But the chittabhasa in reference to knowing the self is totally irrelevant. Because the reflection of consciousness is not necessary when the vritti itself, the vritti vyapti, is of consciousness.
It's irrelevant in what way? Now,
well, because if
but
the
there still has to be a location, so to speak, for the vritti, right?
Which yeah. Oh, no, chittabhasa isn't about location.
Okay.
So let's look like this. You're thinking of subtle body for chittabhasa.
Yeah, I think I am. Maybe
yeah,
I
it's not subtle body. Yeah, okay. It's like this.
Uh-huh.
First of all, if we were to say the subtle body has 19 components.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to be a subtle body. The subtle body includes all of the prana, the five pranas, the five karmendriyas, the five sense organs, that's 15. And then it includes the four functions of the mind. Okay, so now with the mind, four functions of the antikarana, which would be the citta, the memory, the manas, the fluctuating mind, the buddhi, which is what we're concerned with here, and the ahankara. Okay, so now we've got this antikarana, the mind, that has vrittis, and we're now going to look at the vrittis. What type of vrittis? The vrittis that take place in the buddhi. This type of vrittis, jnana vrittis, knowledge vrittis. So now, first of all, the antikarana of the sukshma sharira is going to be made of the subtle elements of sattva, rajas, and tamas. The antikarana and the sense organs are just made of the sattvic aspect. So the antikarana, the mind, means inner instrument, antikarana. That inner instrument is just made of the five sattvic elements together. The sattva reflects consciousness by its nature. That reflection of consciousness is called chittabhasa. Now say a vritti. So now we're going to say a vritti, which takes place in which is the buddhi. We're talking about jnana vrittis, knowledge vrittis. Any vritti, by its nature, is going to have a twofold function for knowledge to take place. That vritti will pervade the object that we call vritti vyapti, and it also illumines the object, because every vritti, by its nature, is illumined itself. That's what we call chittabhasa. And so any time the vritti pervades an object, the consciousness pervades it also.
When you're talking about pervading an object, the vyapti, vritti, does that mean that you're focused on a particular object? Or like if it's this room, is it the whole room? Or is it narrowed down to
it depends. When we're talking about knowledge, it's whatever is being known by the mind at that time.
Because you're talking about modification, modification.
Thought modification. But when we talk about it through knowledge, it means that we're using a pramana, like we're using our eyes to see something,
right,
or our ears to hear something, or we're doing an inference. And so, but is this going to be generally taking place even without knowledge? Like, say you have a memory. If you have a memory, right, then the mind is assuming the form of the memory, and the memory is illumined. But why we're limiting this to knowledge right now is because in this discussion, we're talking about the difference between gaining knowledge of an object in the world and gaining knowledge of the self. And so now, what we say is the vritti itself can be looked at in two ways. It does two things. It takes on the knowledge, the form of the object, and it is illumined. When it takes on the form of the object, now the ignorance is being eliminated, because now the object is known by the mind. We talk about the fact of it being known. There's two things necessary here for an object in the world. It's got to take the object, form of the object, and it has to be illumined. Then you can have knowledge. Taking the form of the object is called vritti-vyapti. The fact that it's illumined is called pala-vyapti. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So now, in terms of self-knowledge, what is necessary? The mind always, that vritti-vyapti, that pala-vyapti will always be there just because of the sattva aspect. But what is really necessary for atma-jnana to take place? Vritti-vyapti. Because the pala-vyapti is the chitta-bhasa, the consciousness that illumines the vritti. But when the content of the vritti is the consciousness itself, then there's nothing else to come in to illumine. Because it's already illumined. The very subject matter of the vritti is the luminosity, is the consciousness.
And that's what we're thinking about.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking about. So they just want to make that difference, that there's not another consciousness that comes in to illumine it, that there's not two acts. And so when that takes place, when the vritti-vyapti takes place, there is no subject-object relationship there. Because if otherwise what happens, vritti-vyapti takes place, you take the mind takes the form of the object, and that is known. A subject-object relationship, because I'm not the pot. So I don't have an identity with the object. But here, when the vritti-vyapti takes place, then that which would illumine the vritti is what has already been the vritti-vyapti. Right? The vritti-vyapti is of the subject that would normally illumine the vritti-vyapti.
So
that pala-vyapti, there's no place for it.
What you're saying is there's always a vritti? Is that it?
Even in self-knowledge, when there's no subject-object relationship, the vritti is still there, but it's very subtle, right? Because there's no content other than consciousness. So we say that vritti is, the word for it is atisukshma. It is extremely subtle. It's still there, but it's just overshadowed by the content, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we say, it's ati sukshma. It's ati means very sukshma, subtle. Right? And we say it's akanda akara vritti, because the vritti is in the akara, the nature of the vritti. The akara of the vritti is akanda. There's no subject object relationship there, because only vritti vyapti has taken place. The vritti vyapti is of what would cause the pala vyapti. Is this too much Sanskrit?
No.
The vritti-vyapti, the pervasion of the self, is the vritti-vyapti, and that self is what illumines the vritti to cause the pala-vyapti, the objectification. But the objectification is of the subject, so that now there can't be a subject-object relationship. So it's just a non-dual.
All right, now wait a second. So the process of cognition, we're saying, is twofold, the two parts, the vritti-vyapti, in which the mind goes out, assumes this form of whatever the cognition is, or, to use other language that you've used, it pervades the object.
Yeah.
But those are the two ways that I've heard you say.
Yeah. And let me just make a little statement there. There in Vedanta Paribhasha, which really discusses these pramanas in depth, there's argument around whether or not the vritti actually pervades out into the space to pervade, or whether because of the eyes or sense organs or it comes in. There's this debate on that. But whether you say it's actually flowing out or the material is flowing in, it doesn't make any difference in terms of vritti vyapti. The mind, the antikarana, is still pervading the object, whatever it is.
Right.
Whether the object is coming in and it's pervaded by the object coming in through the eyes or whatever, or the mind actually flowing out, it still is taking on the form of the object. That's what we call vritti vyapti.
And then the pola vyapti is the illumination of the object by consciousness. Right?
Well, what we
I know it's happening at the same time.
Yeah, so. But how we actually say that is, that's all right to say it, as long as you like that, it's fine. As long as you understand that the vritti is made of sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattva, in terms of the material of the maya, sattva reflects by its nature consciousness. So wherever the sattva is, there's the reflection of consciousness. Right? And so the vritti, because of the material of the vritti, when the vritti vyapti takes place, that object will be known. It will be known because of the reflection of consciousness. So now you can say consciousness illumines the object. But the way, reason it illumines the object is because of the sattva nature of the vritti. Right? Because consciousness is illumining this too. It's illumining all of these things, but these things don't feel like they're gaining any knowledge. Right?
So is the pola vyapti, the chitta-vasa is the reflection of consciousness in the mind. So
that's
the
right.
Process of that is called pola vyapti, is that what you're saying?
What makes it pola vyapti is that now the object is known. The vritti vyapti is the mind assuming the form of the object. The knownness of the object is the pola vyapti. Right, so the vritti, you go out, you take on the mind takes the form of the object and the object is known. They're simultaneous. Or they're happening simultaneously, but you divided it into these two acts, the assuming the object, the form of the object, and once that object, as that object is assumed, the form is taken, then it is known.
Well, it means like result here or something?
Yeah,
like
that. That's right. That's the result of it.
For
the knownness.
For Brahmanishta, then, I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is like you can sort of have these akhanda akara vrittis, kind of like check in, you know? Oh, am I still there? Yeah, I'm still there.
Yeah.
But then, for Brahmanishta, they're kind of like you don't need to check in.
You don't need to check in.
Well, because you don't make mistakes anymore.
Well, you know,
like that Shruti note.
I would say maybe another way of saying for the Brahmanishta, it means that your mind and the experiences that the world throws up to you don't confuse you. They don't. Even if your mind is going through this or that, you know, say your mind has a reaction, it doesn't mean you don't have Brahmanishta. It means you don't have Brahmanishta is if that reaction or whatever is going on is something that is not held by your knowledge. It shakes your knowledge.
You mean you identify it?
This is a common one. Somebody's gaining knowledge and things are becoming clear, and then something throws their mind and they feel miserable and have a big reaction and whatnot. And then the next thought is, well, I guess I don't know myself, because if I knew myself,
I wouldn't do that.
I wouldn't be a reaction.
Such a
jerk. Yeah. So that means that behavior there isn't understood in the light of yourself and in the light of your knowledge. And so it throws you.
I'm going back to, I think, Suryadas, is that your name?
Suryadas.
Suryadas. He was asking about the vritti, and is there always a vritti? What about with japa yoga, where there's silence and then word, and is silence a vritti?
There, as long as you have a mind, you have a vritti. There's you're never without a vritti, as long as the antikarana, except like in deep sleep, but then the vritti is in unmanifest condition. It's still there in causal form. But that's it. As long as you have an upadhi, you're going to have a vritti. As long as the mind is awake, a vritti is there.
So the vritti, another word for vritti could be a shape of an object or objectlessness, like silence. Or
well, violence. Just think of the vritti as the antikarana. Now this is the thing. Say you're doing one very valuable thing about japa. Say you're doing japa and it starts out mantra silence, mantra silence, mantra silence. So now you've objectified the silence and you're appreciating the silence between the mantras. Okay? But as you go on, what happens is that you recognize that there's a silence that is the substratum of the mantra silence, mantra silence. That silence is not a vritti. That silence is a swatha siddha of yours, of Atma. That is the Atma. Right? All vrittis, all sound, all noise, all silence takes place in the silence of the Atma.
Oh.
Right? And that's self-evident.
Oh, so that's not a vritti.
That's Brahman.
And there's no, but there's akhandakara vritti, which is a vritti of Atma or Brahman.
Yeah, but that just means that with the akhandakara vritti, there's no perception of the creation at that time.
There's no vritti at that time.
There is a vritti. It's atisukshma vritti. See, there's just not a vritti of an object. There's a vritti of the subject. That's what we call vritti vyapti.
Okay, then silence isn't a vritti, but akhandakara vritti.
You can have a silent vritti, but silence is illumining the silent vritti. You can have a noisy vritti, but silence is illumining the noisy vritti. So you have to recognize another way of saying, you can say the Atma, which is silent because noise belongs to Maya, right? The Atma, which is silent, illumines the silence. The Atma, which is silent, illumines the noise. So you have to differentiate the silence that is always there in spite of the noise.
There's more subtle forms of silence. There can be silence, there can be a vritti of silence, and then there can be more subtle as just...
Well, there can be like vrittis being. Of silence, but then just the nature of your being is always silent. So like right now, as we're talking... Right as we're talking and kind of experiencing each other in this room, there's the noise and the perceptions and the interaction taking place all in silence. Right? The silence is your own being that is present to the whole.
Presence.
Yeah, the presence. Yeah. The presence of yourself is not noisy.
Rana, you sit like the carp is inert, right? And then you sit, it's unconscious. How can it be unconscious if it's inert?
I meant inert. The carpet's not unconscious. I meant not conscious. If I said unconscious, I meant inert or not conscious.
I'm not conscious. That's what
you
meant.
Okay. That's what I meant.
Yeah, can I just... I kind of lost my train, but nirvikalpa samadhi then is the subtlest form of silence. I'm thinking of it in that language. It's not at all being aware of objects, but just pure Brahman, even though there are objects.
Usually when they think of nirvikalpa, nirvikalpa is like the akhandakara vritti, just vritti vyapti, where you're just abiding as Brahman without the perception of the creation. When we say nirvikalpa samadhi, that's usually what we mean.
But that's done in silent meditation. That's how it's presented in yoga books, right? Meditation.
What would be noisy meditation?
Well, let's say noticing sound. So in silence, sound is.
Okay, so if you're going nirvikalpa, you might be start out noticing sound, noticing the body, noticing thoughts in the mind that get subtler and subtler mm-hmm. until you resolve your mind itself just into the conscious being.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no subject-object relationship.
Okay. And would you call that a vritya? Okay.
You could say that's vritti-vyapti.
Mm. The mind
you know, but,
always...
But I want to make something clear here. When we're using vritti-vyapti and pala-vyapti as technical terms for how knowledge takes place.
Mm.
We're differentiating. We use these terms to differentiate how knowledge of objects in mitya in the world take place versus how does self-knowledge take place. So we want to understand how does self-knowledge, how do you have an akhanda akara vritti? What is happening for them in the mind? And so it says, well, in the mind, usually there's this vritti vyapti and pala vyapti. But for self-knowledge, there's really only vritti vyapti. The pala vyapti will be there, but it's irrelevant.
So can I? So my understanding of that is that basically, vritti vyapti is like the cause of perception, and the result is you see an object of perception. But in this case, you don't have to see an object of perception because the object, the result, and the cause are exactly the same, right? Because
the
vritti vyapti, which is like the illumination of the object or the pervading of an object, is the same as the. There's no difference between what is pervaded and what's actually seen.
What is pervaded and what would normally illuminate.
Right, okay. So, and then this thing with in yoga, though, sometimes, I mean, I think, I don't know that much, I don't know anything about yoga, but I do remember that in Patanjali, the first aphorism is something about yoga being the vritti, you know.
The first is chitta, vritti, nirodaha.
Nirodaha, okay, not nivritti.
No, chitta vritti nirodaha means the stopping,
extinction of,
the stopping, the controlling of all vritti.
Of all vritti.
Yeah.
Right, so that seems different than this because in
Vedanta,
there's a vritti of the self, whereas they're talking in yoga that you control or you cease all vritti.
But let's look at why that is. Yoga has for its philosophy Sankhya. In Sankhya, there's Maya, what we call Maya, they call Prakriti. We will also use the word Prakriti, but we use it synonymously with Maya. Prakriti is real. This physical universe made of sattva, rajas, and tamas, this creation has its own being, its own existence. It's not mitya. It is real, solid, material stuff made of the Prakriti, sattva, rajas, and tamas. This Prakriti has to be brought into absolute quiescence. Okay?
According to yoga.
In order to free the Purusha. In Sankhya, there are many Purushas. You have a Purusha, you have a Purusha, you have a Purusha. There's an infinite number of Purushas. You have one too. And each Purusha is actually limitless consciousness. It's like Satchitananda. The Purusha, limitless, but there are many. This is Sankhya. And so in Sankhya Yoga we call it, the emphasis is on bringing this body, mind, sense organs, all is Prakriti. What has to happen is this Prakriti has to be controlled and brought into a state of silence. Quiescence, it's called.
That sounds like a big job.
Yeah. And then you have to maintain it. You have to set it, you have to make it work and work at it to make it what we call habitual. So there's like what we call an anuvritti. That like you want to work and work and work to bring the prakriti under control until you've done it enough so that it just stays under control in that way. You have to be very careful because something can bring you back out in like a bouncing ball. Example they use. You'll find yourself back in samsara.
Mm.
And so this control of the prakriti is a big job.
Mm.
And, you know, and then really there's not any real liberation for them until the prakriti is totally under control and you lose the body actually. You can be liberated, but it would be a liberated state would be keeping all of this in quiescence in a nirvikalpa samadhi state.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
It's,
so that's yoga. And so that's, you'll find that when you're reading the Patanjali Sutras, you have to remember that they're talk from coming from a totally different place.
It's from a liberated state, but without the backing of the knowledge that you're...
Well, they'll view more like this. They have the knowledge, their philosophical understanding. But then you have to practice. You have to practice it to bring the prakriti under control.
Withdraw the senses.
Mm-hmm. They're real senses that you're withdrawing. Mm-hmm. A real mind that you're withdrawing. Real prakriti that you're working with. That has a real substantial identity, which is different than the purusha. Sankhya yoga is totally dvaita. There are the prakriti of sattva, rajas, and tamas is one real entity that has many parts because it's made of, it's dual. Prakriti is one, that is, but that one is dual. Mm-hmm. Sattva, rajas, and tamas, responsible for the whole of creation. The purushas are infinite. And God is an exalted purusha.
Is sutta vritti nirodha then it's not a vritti?
No, it's the control of the vrittis. It's bringing the citta, the mind under control, bringing it into quiescence.
Mm-hmm. So you said the mind is always has a vritti, but not in sleep, deep sleep, and not in silent meditation.
No, in silent. No, in deep sleep it does have a vritti. I mean, in deep sleep it goes into what we call avyekta or unmanifest condition. It goes into its own causal condition.
Mm-hmm.
In nirvikalpa samadhi, it's not in deep sleep. Their vritti is there, but it's ati sukshma, very subtle, and there's no subject to object relation because it's all vritti vyapti. The vritti has pervaded the subject, right? And there's nothing else filling the vritti. The only content of that vritti now is Atma.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no experience of duality because there's no second thing.
So citta vritti nirodha, there's no vritti. But how is that? There would be no vritti in the mind when akhandakara vritti, there is a vritti. I don't...
Now, if citta vritti nirodha, it's how I understand it. That's not Vedanta, right? That's...
Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering, you know, is there a vritti there or not? In silence, when the mind is silenced, there is no vritti.
Yeah, they would call in Panini, potentially yoga.
Mm.
I think that they do have silvikalpa and nirvikalpa, and as long as you're alive, you're going to have a vritti. I don't know.
Silence is a vritti. That's my question. Is silence a vritti or not?
There's nothing wrong with silence being a vritti, but you have to understand that Atma is also silent, and that's not a vritti.
Wait, Atma is silence, and that's not a vritti, but there's always a vritti in the mind.
Let me ask you this.
Mm.
Say if just Atma, which is self-evident consciousness, is there any sound in it?
No.
Okay, so would we say it's silent?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so is that Atma a vritti? Is Atma a vritti?
I think you said yes, but I don't...
I would never say Atma is a vritti.
Yeah, right. I don't think it is. Okay, right.
Yeah, how could I say Atma is a vritti?
I think I'm trying to get what you're saying logically. I'm not making sense of it, but yeah, Atma is not a vritti.
Not a vritti. Is it silent?
Yes.
Okay, so silence doesn't have to be a vritti then.
Okay, so silence is not necessarily vritti. So that means there's not necessarily vritti in the mind at all times because the mind can be silent between every...
You're not getting me.
Uh-huh.
What about if I say... Silence illumines a silent vritti and the consciousness, which is silence. Consciousness is silent by its nature.
Mm.
It illumines a vritti of silence.
Mm-hmm.
And it illumines a vritti of sound.
I see what you're saying. There's Atma, which is silence, and then there's a vritti of silence.
Yeah.
But then citta vritti nirodha is, they're saying it's not a vritti, but it is a vritti. Because they're not seeing Atma, which is not a vritti.
now you're getting too technical with potentially I can't answer it with authority because I haven't done that much potential.
I see.
But
I think it
based on what you we were talking discussing tonight, there would always still be a risky in the mind.
And so what does that mean for them with liberation is that they have to stay, have kept everything in quiescence. But what that exactly means in terms of what you're talking, I'm not sure.
It's just the silence having a subtler vritti. That's my guess or my understanding, that silence gets subtler and subtler. That's what the yoga texts say anyway.
Well, whatever that means. If you say silence gets subtler and subtler, you're still in the world of vrittis.
Of vrittis.
Because
okay.
There's differentiation.
Right, okay.
It just seems to me it means that we're talking about when, you know, we're at that point where the adi, or what do you call the adi vritti?
Pati sukshma vritti?
Yeah. Where everything is just, you know, just the reflection.
There's nothing else there.
Nothing else.
Okay.
But there's still a vritti.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just saying that probably in the experience, you're probably getting to that.
More and more subtle means there's less and less
but
agitation.
Then,
or
the thing is that then you come out of it. So here, the difference is that what was that, you know? Here, there's a knowledge base, mm-hmm. and there's you have an experience mm-hmm. without really knowing what's going on. You got to that point, you come out of it.
It sounds like there's still vritti going on, even though they're calling it chitta vritti now. Has to be.
Again, I don't want to talk about it because I'm outside of my scope.
Yeah.
I don't mind talking about it, but I don't want to be able to present myself as a authority there, but I really know what I'm talking about. Other than the little bit I said.
Can I ask one?
Sure.
So where does Savakalpa Samadhi come in?
That's what I was talking about a little earlier.
Yeah.
Say you are having a vritti vyapti, what we call vritti vyapti, but the mind is still there. This is the example they use. Maybe that'll make it clear. If you hold a candle flame up to the sun, the candle flame is still the same content as the sun, fire. Okay, but you may be able to see the outline of the candle. That's savikalpa. If the sun totally overwhelms the outline of the candle, that's nirvikalpa. So here, when you have that vritti vyapti or akhandakar vritti,
mm-hmm.
it's savikalpa, as long, even though the content of the mind is only the self, still the mind, the presence of the mind is still, has not been overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
When the presence of the mind is overwhelmed, then there's only the experience of awareness there, not the mind which is enjoying awareness.
So that would be the way a jnani functions when he has to function in the objects of with the world, right? In the world of, you know, of objects would be in a sort of
what would be, like savikalpa.
Something like that, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Because, yeah, maybe.
Well, but always be savikalpa.
Right.
Yeah, nirvikalpa means there's no world there at that time. If you use savikalpa in that way, but if we're
mm-hmm.
using savikalpa and nirvikalpa just in reference to akhandakar vritti,
mm-hmm.
then all you're thinking about is the mind goes as first in savikalpa, and then it'll be overwhelmed and be in nirvikalpa.
Oh, okay.
But nirvikalpa, I mean, a lot of times, like because of like whatever history or something, what you think nirvikalpa suddenly has to go on for a long time, but truthfully, if we're talking in terms of akhandaka vritti, it's just going to be a split second.
That's right. And then, even like with aprokshanabhuti, in the end of it, Shankara is kind of making fun of all of this because Your vikalpa is here right now. Because it's your very nature of your swarupa. So, of your nature. And so once that ajnanam, that ignorance is removed, you recognize there's never a time when you don't recognize nirvikalpa. You are nirvikalpa. Mm-hmm. Right? And this is mitya. Mm-hmm. So there's that confusion isn't there.
The joke's on this.
Yeah.